You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build the social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Welcome to Social Selling Simplified. I'm your host, Ashley Shaw, and today I have Jessica Zimmerman here. And Jessica is an entrepreneur, an educator, podcaster, and author who leverages her story to empower women to boldly pursue wholehearted lives. After experiencing death, loss, financial failure, and caretaking a chronically ill husband, Jessica has experienced the freedom that comes with knowing the future is not guaranteed. Jessica helps her audience build businesses and lives they love through her online education, podcast, and a newly released book called Sleeping with a Stranger. So thank you so much for being here today, Jessica.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So I want to dive in first to, I always love to start with people's stories and how they got into doing what they're doing. So maybe you can share with our listeners how you got into doing what you're doing.
Yeah. So basically, I just always wanted to own my own business. So I, like you said, I'd experienced death at a young age. I was 3 years old when my sister died. We were in a car accident together and she died and I survived. And I think from a very young age, I experienced this sense of life. Like people say this all the time, right? People say life is short, life is short. I really knew that to my core. And I think I really felt like I've got this one life and I want to do something, you know, I don't want to waste it. And, you know, school was always frustrating for me because I felt like our whole day is being used, you know, just learning things that, you know, a lot of it I didn't care about. I mean, when I was interested in a subject, I was all in, you know, but some of the stuff, it's like, I'm never going to use this, you know, and I just felt like it was wasteful. And I started kind of dropping out of sports at the end of high school because I realized I'm 5'3". I live in Conway, Arkansas. Like I'm never going to make a life being a basketball player. And so I started, you know, like taking photography lessons and that kind of stuff. Just I wanted to be involved in things that I could use in my life. And anyway, I knew if I ever had a family of my own that I wanted to be as present of a mom as my mom was for me. I have three kids now, but at the time when I left to go to college, my mom had a really difficult time because when my sister died, she kind of put all of her energy into me. And then when I was gone, it was like, you know, in some ways, kind of like a second mourning. And so I just thought, okay, it was honestly getting into business for myself was emotional security. It was emotional insurance. And that might be kind of messed up, but it was just the truth. And I just thought if something ever happened to my family, I need something that's mine, that is just mine, and that is okay. And so we can skip forward several years. I ended up buying a business that was a wedding event rental business. And I ended up working all hours of the, 16-hour days, had no money to show for it. And I thought, okay, this isn't what the plan was. So I got really serious, took out a loan to buy me some time just to educate myself about business. And it was all very simple things that I learned, but I was able to kind of turn it around pretty quickly. And what I realized is that people in the wedding business, there was nothing that taught us, you know, here's how you have a successful wedding business. And this was really before like online courses became a big thing. And I just wrote this thing called The Business Behind the Blooms. It was the foundation, you know, of how you have a successful business. And it really wasn't even, I didn't write it as like a how-to. I honestly wrote it almost more from a perspective of a memoir. I just shared what I did. You know, I was like, here's what I was doing. And then I did this. And then this was the outcome. And I think the reason why it became so successful, and it's interesting because I had no newsletter list. I think I had 300 followers on Instagram, and I sold it completely through just posting about it on Instagram. And I sold 44 copies. Mm. And that right there showed me that what happened was after I started getting feedback from people, because I just thought I'd share it once and be done. But I started getting feedback from people who took it, who said, this is the best thing I've ever taken because I don't feel like I'm being told what to do. I feel like I'm reading someone's story and I feel like I'm a bird on the wall, you know, and I'm getting, or a fly on the wall, and I'm getting to relate to it and everything is working. And then I had people who would say, you know, I've never booked more than a $2,000 wedding, and I booked a $20,000 wedding, like right after taking your program. And, or I've never made more than $40,000 the whole year, and I made six figures the year after I took your program. And those were the things that made me know, okay, this doesn't just work for me. This actually works. And so, yeah, I just started kind of sharing what I did from a perspective of like, this works for me, here you go. And that was kind of when I at first felt, you know, at my most, I guess, seen, because, or at my most comfortable, because I felt really like a fraud in the wedding business. I didn't really care. You know, like there's all these people that they know the name of every flower. They are obsessed with learning about, you know, color palettes. And I just didn't care. I mean, I'd honed a craft, but the thought of doing that for the next decade just was miserable to me. Mm-hmm. And when I taught my first webinar, when I was very, 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 very young, I used to sit in front of a mirror after my sister died because I didn't have anyone else to play with. So I would sit in front of a mirror and I would talk to myself and I would interview myself and stuff. And when you teach a webinar, that's what you do essentially, is you, there are people there, but you can't see them. All you see is yourself. And at that moment I thought, oh, okay, you've actually been preparing for this your whole life. So, yeah.
And so, can you share a little bit more about what you do now and how you, how you help empower women and what that sort of looks like for you in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, you know, all I really know how to do is share what I know. And I, you listen, I don't know a lot, but I have grown into this really confident place as a businesswoman. And a lot of that, it came because I was kind of forced to do that. My husband, you know, at first I was really, I've always felt really out of place where I lived. I live in Arkansas, and I've always felt like people didn't, or they didn't express it. Maybe they do, but it's not expressed a lot, you know, dream bigger, or they, you know, elevate you to do more or to be better, to, I don't know, just have this bigger life. And so I always felt a little bit out of place, but I started really when my husband got sick. So I had a little girl, and then I had, she wasn't even 2 years old, and I had twin boys. And about 6 weeks after that, my husband started getting really sick. Now, up until this point, I'd never brought home any money, and my husband had taken care of us. And he had just changed jobs. He was a financial advisor, and he had just changed jobs, and he started getting really sick. And he was in and out of the hospital for a year. And it became really obvious to me that, you know, here's a financial advisor who works, you know, who, he's not going to get paid if he doesn't bring in new clients. And I knew that it wouldn't be personal. It would be business, but no business can keep you on. And to me, it wasn't a matter of if he would get fired. It was when. And I just thought, okay, I've got to turn this business, or this, you know, kind of this, I use quotation marks, hobby business, you know, because it really wasn't a business. It was more of a hobby. But I've got to turn that into an actual business. And when I did, it really came from a place of fear, you know, of just, I've got to, you know, he's going to lose his job and I'm going to have to support us. And I do not want to go work for anyone else. So I have to figure it out. It was not necessarily a healthy, you know, a few years of just having newborn twins, having a two-year-old, having a husband in and out of the hospital, and trying to supplement his six-figure income. And it was an exhausting, you know, couple of years. But I did it because oftentimes when we're backed against a corner, we do anything that we have to do, you know, to get what we need. And that's it really was just a determination that, you know, drove me. So today, I just came out with a book. It was released a couple months ago. Very grateful. It hit Wall Street Journal bestseller, USA Today bestseller, but it's called Sleeping with a Stranger. And it's about anyone who followed me for any amount of time, they saw me share, you know, about the business side and the highs and lows, the good things, the bad things. I was always very vulnerable in sharing about business. And I think that's why the business behind the blooms, and I have some other programs, Know Your Numbers and a winning website and the power of pinning. The reason they do well is because I'm just very vulnerable about the information. But what I didn't realize is that being vulnerable about business was really preparing me to be vulnerable about my personal life, which is what Sleeping with a Stranger is all about. It's about what was going on in my life personally while I was kind of building this empire, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like, I mean, in your story, vulnerability seems to sort of this, I don't know if cornerstone is the right word, but it's been this like connection of dots that has, it seems like has happened from a very early age. And then to see, you know, I think it's, I've always felt like, you know, when you said there about not feeling like a complete expert in something, but sort of going at it anyway, there's definitely this vulnerability that accompanies you when you dive into something and you know that, you know, like there are other people out there that know more or that have more of those, you know, the background and the education. I tend to talk to a lot of social sellers and entrepreneurs that have that fear. And it's an interesting paradigm and relationship between, you know, being vulnerable and also balancing that fear that goes with it. So how do you think that you've managed to bring those two things together? Because I think like you are a beautiful example of those two things, you know, like dancing together and something beautiful coming out from it.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with how, you know, I was brought up, meaning that I think, you know, when you lose someone so close to you at such a young age, you do just really have, you know, kind of woven into your who you are that life is short. And I have really grown to a place, I think, especially when my husband got sick and kind of the fear of that again, right? It was like the closest person to me died when I was young. And now my husband's the closest human being to me now. And he could die from this. Mm-hmm. And so there was this, you know, I couldn't do anything to save my sister Courtney, but I'm going to do everything I can to save him. And so I put that on myself that none of that was asked, you know, I wasn't asked to do that, but I put that on myself. And instead of really just supporting him through his journey, I made it all, you know, about fixing it. And I really kind of robbed him a bit of his journey. But as far as the vulnerability thing, I think that, like I said, once I started realizing, because when I wrote The Business Behind the Blooms, which was the first program I ever wrote, like I said, I said, I'm not going to tell anybody what to do because I don't know if this will work for them. I'm just going to share what I did. And honestly, it just came from a place of that way, if it doesn't work, you know, like I'm not kind of liable for it or anything. I'm just sharing what I did. But that also felt most natural. Like I know how to write that way. I don't know how to write, here's how you do this. Like, that's just not what I do. Because I don't think what I do is going to work for everybody. But I think people related to that so well because there were so many kind of like how-to things out there. And so seeing that people really related to the vulnerability of business really got me really comfortable with that. And then it made me confident in that. You know, I was like, wow, this is the best thing for my business is for me to just be really honest. And when we were going through Brian's illness, my husband's illness, I remember saying to him at some point, I just have a feeling that this isn't for nothing. Like, I just have a feeling that we are supposed to share about this one day. And when I got the call to write the book, I sat down with him again and he said, you have to share everything. Like, you can't sugarcoat it. You can't. So just like I did with my programs, where I didn't sugarcoat it. I mean, I shared, hey, here's how I really failed. Here's how I really messed up. Here's how, you know, here's how I lost 20 grand. Here's how I lost 100 grand, whatever. I was going to do the same thing with sharing about our personal journey and just, you know, how you don't have sex for a couple years when your husband's sick and you have twin babies and, you know, all these things that people don't want to talk about, and losing yourself. And what's interesting is I believe that my husband and I, that we were, so to answer your question, how do you share vulnerably is you got to get confident in it. And whatever it is that you have to do to be confident, whether that is, you know, work on yourself. I go to therapy every week. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating to educate yourself about yourself, because when you, whatever you know, you're confident in, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, if I asked you to count to 100, you don't fear failing that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you know how to count to 100. If I ask you, you know, something else, I don't even know an example, like, you might not be as confident. It's just what you know. And so once I really started to know myself better and understand myself better, I just became more confident as a person. And I don't need anyone else's approval for that. As long as I have my approval, I'm good. And so I really am able to kind of go through life that way, knowing that if I'm good, we're good. You know, I don't need people to like me. I feel confident in the decisions I make. I feel confident in how I'm raising my kids. Even if someone disagrees with me, that's okay. It's not, they're not your kids. They're my kids. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You just have to get confident with your own decisions and mm-hmm. stuff. And I think that really stems from getting confident with yourself. And confidence comes when you know. So if you know yourself, you're going to be confident in yourself.
And was that ever something that you felt like you had to work through in terms of, I guess, where I'm going with this is, this is another thing that I hear a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with, is other people's opinions and, you know, the backlash that can happen when you do put yourself out there and you are vulnerable. So do you have any advice or strategies around that? I know getting to know yourself is obviously one of those. That's a big one. Is there anything else that you feel that, because you are obviously very, it's a strength for you. Is there anything else that you felt like led to that, or advice that you would have to give other entrepreneurs on that?
Yeah, I think a big one for me was, now you can only imagine in the wedding world is all visual. And so about the time that, you know, Instagram is coming to play is about the time that I'm really in the wedding world. And so I was at one point, you know, following all these wedding accounts. And it just kind of hit me one day. I started really reading about, you know, successful people and really kind of researching and studying successful people and what do successful people do. I started taking on the habits of successful people, like waking up early, you know, taking care of yourself first, those kinds of things. But one of them that I read just kept saying, like, stay in your lane. Like, don't look at what other people are doing. How can you ever get your to-do list done if you're looking at what other people are doing? And it hit me so clear. And I just unfollowed everyone in my industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, from other floral designers, to wedding planners, to photographers, to videographers, to caterers. I mean, anyone who would ever be posting a photo of a wedding, I unfollowed them. And then I made a rule with myself that I'm never going to follow more than 200 people, because you can just get out of control. And then you're just scrolling all the time. And so I thought, I want to make sure that I am only using social media as a business platform to get people to my website. So for the most part, to be totally honest, I'm on there to post and then I leave. With everything, you know, when we were on the pandemic and we were on, you know, lockdown and all that, you're obviously on your phone a little bit more. And I really took note of those 200 people I was following. And I just made sure it was going to, I didn't want more of the same. I wanted diversity. You know, I wanted to hear from different people in different fields, in different industries. And that really is what makes me have better ideas, not seeing more of the same, you know what I mean? But really, you know, following this basket weaver in Africa and then following this ceramic maker, this pottery maker, and then also following, you know, an artist who does art on canvas, but then also following the leader of, you know, Forbes Women or whatever, and then following somebody like Reese Witherspoon, who is, sharing different things. And then, you know what I mean? Just totally different. So I'm not following all artists or all celebrities or all, you know what I'm saying? Just getting mm-hmm. different voices in there that are nobody that I look at or see is going to make me feel bad about myself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? There's not a single person that I am following that is going to make me, I want it to elevate me. I want every single person I follow to elevate me and to make me feel like I want to do more, be better. And that's it. You know, I can follow friends and family on Facebook. I don't need that on Instagram. On Instagram, it's about who's going to encourage me, elevate me, make me think a little better, a little harder, challenge me. Because what you consume is what you are going to give out. That's just, I mean, that wise thing about the average of the five people you hang around the most. Mm-hmm. That goes equally with what you consume. And I think, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, I challenged my audience. I said, if you look, because if I'm being really honest, the majority of my following is white. And I started clicking on their profiles and then seeing who they were following. And the majority of the people they were following were white. And I said, I encourage you to diversify that, because the only thing you're consuming are white voices, then that's what you're going to put out into your family and into, you know what I mean? We need to have diversity in our feed in all ways, in races, in industries, in, you know, leadership. But I think by being able to take out the comparison game, to go back to your original question, if you can easily eliminate comparing yourself, that's going to help, because then you're going to be able to just focus on your work, do your own work. And the more work you accomplish, the more knowledge you have, which the more you know, the more confident you're going to be. It's just simple.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember going through a bit of a like Facebook unfollow, you know, like I sat down and was very intentional about it, because it can definitely, you know, bring your energy down, especially if you are someone that uses social media for business purposes, and it can get very entangled of I'm going on to engage with people and that sort of idea. And then you go down this rabbit hole. And I think, you know, one of the biggest ways to build momentum and continue to have confidence and success is to figure out how to manage that energy and manage that flow to make sure that you're operating in that, you know, that positive space. So I think that's really, really great advice. And I love the diversity piece. I think there's not only so many ways that, you know, I find I'm most creative when I'm actually outside of being stuck in the same scenario. I find actually like travel for me usually really helps break up the monotonousness of what I normally see. And that's where my creativity can flow a little bit more. So it's like changing the surroundings, changing the scenery, changing the voices. Like it's about doing all of that to bring in the creativity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I would love to talk a little bit more about your book and what the listeners can expect in your book. So the title of your book is Sleeping with a Stranger. And so what kind of things do you talk about in your book? And yeah, what could we expect to see from that?
Yeah, so it's a memoir. It is my life. It is my story. And really, it kind of comes down to the fact of, I feel like when we're born, we're almost handed a script. And we don't really know that we have a script until much later in life. But we are reading off of the script. This is what's expected of you. This is how you should act. This is how you should be. You know, this is what's expected of you. And I honestly think that, you know, I was doing a good job of reading off of my script. My husband, Brian, was doing a good job of reading off of his script. And I think that honestly, it took his illness and him being in and out of the hospital to where he did, you know, eventually lose his job. I had to kind of step up and be the, you know, provider in many ways. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I think we really actually became the people we were always meant to be, had we not ever had a script, you know, had we not ever had someone say, I just get to give an example, little boys, they're taught to, you know, go out for the basketball team. I don't know a little boy, you know, and maybe I'm wrong by saying this, but who says, man, you know what I really want to be? I really want to be the manager of that basketball team. Like, I really want to do the laundry and I really want to just take care of the players. You know what I mean? Like, I think most fathers would say, no, you don't want to do that. You need to try out for the team. My husband is the most amazing caretaker there is. Like, he takes care of me and our children better than I ever could, meaning like just taking care of our everyday needs, you know, making sure there's groceries, making sure that laundry's clean, making sure that if one of my kids has an accident, that it's cleaned up. I mean, he's just naturally that way. And I believe that we're all born, you know, with these natural strengths. And I think that along the way, society, which is also the script, right, tells us, no, that's not how you need to be. You need to be this way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I'm a natural leader. That is that's not who I want to be. That's just who I am. I'm not a leader for everybody, but for, you know, I naturally see a better way of doing things in everything, not just in business and everything. I mean, the kids freaking drop off at their school. I'm like, there's a better way to do that. Like, I always am just thinking that way. But my voice was even put, you know, brought down sometimes when I was growing up. It was like, no, you're too young to have that idea, honey. Let the grownups do that. Or, you know, I'm not talking about in my home, but I'm just saying like in school or in church or something. So that voice starts to get brought down and you start to think, oh, well, maybe my opinion doesn't matter. Maybe I should just shut up and let someone else lead, even though I feel like I could do this job better. And so I think we had kind of, you know, unbeknownst to ourselves, Brian had graduated. He had gotten, you know, the MBA and he had the big finance job and he hated it and he was miserable. But that's what society told him to do. I was, you know, kind of the wife and the mom with the cute little side job on the side. But like that, I wasn't happy. And I think his illness really broke us all the way down to where we had to rebuild. And we were able to really, you know, I was able to go, you know, I really like working more. I really am fed with that. And I get a lot of energy and I feel like I'm a better mom and a better wife and a better everything when I work more. Leading a team is one of my favorite things that I get to do every day. And, you know, then there were things that he really felt that were more him, that felt better. So we really just kind of were broken down to where we were able to rewrite our scripts. And I think I'm really glad that we learned that lesson, you know, in our 30s. Because I know a lot of people, I've heard from people who have read Sleeping with a Stranger and they go, you know, I'm 60 and I still read off the script. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. And I don't know if any of that made sense.
Yeah, no, totally. I was just thinking about this idea of, you know, when you're forced to rewrite things. And I know in some of the most challenging times, when I think back, I lost my job about 2.5 years ago now. I was the president of a fitness company and they decided that they were going to close, like no notice. It was, you know, a very sudden change of events that occurred. And it was like that became the beginning of that new script that I knew I needed to write. And so it was like being in the face of that challenge and vulnerability that pushed me to do that. And so I'm wondering, you know, based on some of your experiences and the rewriting of the script, where it comes from a place of like having to, like you have no choice but to rewrite it. What advice would you have for those that maybe are not in a place that it's, I guess, forced upon them?
Yeah.
You know, like you're coming from a place of like maybe not as much motivation to make those changes.
Yeah, I think that that's such a good question. And I think that we are spoken to in whispers. And we all know when this stuff happens. And it's like for Brian, it was, I don't really think you need to be a financial advisor. Like you're not happy as a financial advisor. You don't like it. You're miserable every day. Like you wake up every day and you dread going to work. Like that's a sign. But in his head, he's thinking, nope, I went to college for this and I got my MBA and we paid all this money and I passed my Series 7 and I can't, that's irresponsible for me to stop because I don't like it. Like what? And then for me, every day would wake up going, I really hate living in Arkansas. I hate living in Arkansas. I don't feel like there's people like me here. I don't feel elevated here. I don't feel like I need a change. I need a change. But then I would say to myself, your parents live here and your children are their only grandchildren. Haven't they suffered enough when losing their other daughter? Like, you should just stay here for them. Instead of listening to myself and instead of Brian listening to himself. I think those thoughts, those aren't what I have really come to learn, is those thoughts are not like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. Okay. Those thoughts are your soul, your truest self is dying to get out. It is there. It is inside of you. It was there the day you were born. And, or, you know, while you were being created, this soul was being created as well. And it has a purpose. And there are so many adults who say, I don't know what my purpose is. I'm not passionate about anything. And it is because you've been reading off of this script your whole life. And listen, you're not in the minority, okay? Because most people have, if you're thinking, yeah, that's me. You're not in the minority. But if you can really start to pay attention, because that isn't, like I said, that's not the devil voice, the devil shoulder saying, hey, here's a thought, and you're supposed to challenge it with being appropriate, okay? This is your soul telling you, this is not what I want, or this is what I want. It is leading you to your purpose. It is, every one of those kind of thoughts is a step. I like to think about my life as big square stepping stones, right? And the one I'm stepping on today is lit up and all the ones behind me are lit up. I can so clearly see the path. I can so clearly see how my sister dying led to me interviewing myself in the mirror, led to me wanting to work for myself, led to me, you know, having a wedding business, led to me being vulnerable about business, led to me teaching webinars, led to me being confident enough to share vulnerably my personal life, right? I can see how all of that was a step to who I'm supposed to be or the impact I'm supposed to make or whatever. I don't know, even if you ask me today, like what my passion is. I don't know. I just do what feels right. But all the stepping stones in front of me are dark. I don't know. I'm never going to know until I get there. But I'm never going to get there until I listen to those things. And I feel like the majority of people, to be honest, I call it like the hallway trap. They're in a hall between two doors. And man, you got to shut that door behind you for the door in front of you to open. And instead, they have that door behind them halfway open and the door in front of them halfway open. And they can't go either way. So they're just stuck. And you got to shut something before something else is going to open. You got to say no to get, you know, that yes for you. And I think one of the best ways to do that, to be honest, that I've learned, and you actually touched on this a second ago, talking about just like being outside and stuff. Really what I believe our soul needs is the most basic things. It is water. It's, you know, eating five colors a day. It's having the sunshine actually hit your skin. And I believe it is, for me, I'm not going to start my day until I do three things, until I tune in to my mind, my body, and my spirit. So for me, because I think they're connected. I think your soul is your spirit. It's trying to talk to you. But I think for me, those are meditating, doing a devotional, and doing some form of exercise. And now here's what I find fascinating. When I sit down to write something or to do something with work or even just to respond to an email, right? There are days that I'm like, yeah, I got this. And then there are days that I sit down and I'm like, I can't even muster up the energy to respond to this email. And it's like the simplest email in the world. I find if I will go move my body, my brain begins to work again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're connected. Same thing. If I go to run and it's like yesterday I could run 5 miles, today I can barely even move. If I will go sit and meditate, suddenly I can run a marathon. they're all connected, and you have to, one isn't going to work without the other. I've found that my best self comes when I do those three things. So for me, paying attention to my mind, body, and my spirit before I do anything else is the most helpful. For anyone that's listening, I used to have a bit of a hang up with meditation. Like I was like, okay, I've tried it. I tried being still. I tried being quiet. It's hard for me. I'm a talkative person, as you can tell. And someone explained it to me as passive prayer. And how when we pray, we're doing all the asking, we're doing all the talking. That's active. And it was like, but what if you sat and just listened? And for me, it's not like I get some answer. It's like, here's what you need to do next. That doesn't happen. But it's almost like when I'm done, the things I was worried about, I just no longer worry about. Like they don't even come up in my brain as, oh, I'm kind of worried about how I'm going to pay for that. Or I'm kind of worried about, it's like there's just this peace when I kind of take care of those three things. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It made me think about a couple of things, like how I love how you put that. Like it doesn't have to be a crazy life altering shift for you to start paying attention to the signs. Like it's like that deeper intuition that is there if you're like silent and you listen for it. So I love that. I love how you know, beautifully describe that and put that together. And I think the, you know, this idea of doing these three things, it was a Rachel Hollis 90-day challenge. And she spoke to some of these things in a very similar way. Like before you dive into work, having an hour off your phone, you know, reading, doing something for yourself, exercising. And it made such a huge difference in just how I felt day to day. I'm a consistent, you know, exerciser, meditator, all that sort of stuff, but placing it before everything else, just like it sets the tone for your whole day. And meditation, I mean, I think why I've been so drawn to it, like you're saying, it's about the messages that will come to you when there is silence. Like I've had these experiences where they call it brain priming, and it's where you're meditating and it's almost like in a way it feels like you're leaving your body a little bit and you're able to experience something so vividly, like you've already been there, and you wake up and you're like, okay, so when this happens, this, whatever it is, like for me, I've had one of these experiences around having our first child. We had trouble with two pregnancies. I had two failed pregnancies before I got pregnant again. And I had this vision of our child and what that looked like and what it felt like. And it was so interesting because 6 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant again.
And that probably gave you so much peace.
That vision. It did. Yeah. It was like that feeling of like, I know what's coming, so I can mm-hmm. be so grateful. And yes. So you feel that abundance in the moment. I think that that's where sometimes people are looking for this message within meditating, and yet like you need to be silent enough for it to appear, because it eventually does, but it's not the first time you meditate. It's practice. And I've really found the Joe Dispenza meditations to be like the ones that are like, you know, the ones that you're like, oh, do I really have 45 minutes to do this?
Yeah, totally.
Those are the ones though that get you, you know, into that state. So yeah, meditation has been life-changing for me.
I also think that if we look at anything that's worth having, right, it takes commitment. People ask me all the time, like, how do you stay motivated? How do you stay? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not motivated. Like nothing is driven by motivation. It's driven by commitment for me, because motivation, I think, is fleeting, you know, and I'm committed to being a mother to my children. It's not always easy. I want to run away from them sometimes. You know what I mean? But I'm committed mm-hmm. to showing up and being their mom. I'm committed to my work and my business. I'm committed, you know, to being active every day. And I'm committed to sitting down every day and doing meditation. Now, sometimes that is 5 minutes, mm-hmm. but it is a daily commitment. So whether it is 5 minutes or 45 minutes, it doesn't matter. You're going to have those days. There's days where I'm like, okay, I'm not into it right now. I'm just going to give 5 minutes. And then it ends up being 20 minutes because I get into it. But if I just went, I'm not into it today and didn't do it at all, then that's not okay. You've got to just, it's got to be just as committed as you are to brushing your teeth every day. You know what I mean? It's just got to be something you do every day. And going back to talking about the habits of successful people, I read that people who get up when it's still dark are more successful. And so now listen, you're talking to somebody who used to like sleep in until noon. I mean, that was my teenage years and my, you know, I did in college, I did not book classes and unless they were like after lunch. I had to train myself. And this did not happen instantly. It did not happen overnight. This has been a long process, but I now wake up every morning at 4 and I have that. My children don't wake up until 6. And so I have 2 hours by myself. It is still dark out. I get to see the sun come up. I play Joni Mitchell radio on Spotify, you know, low, and I've got some incense and a candle. And that is a form of meditation. You know, there's no screens, there's no nothing. It's just, you know, I sit there and I just am. And I just get to kind of wake up as the day wakes up. And there's something really wonderful about that that I found is really helpful. And then when my family does wake up, I am so filled and ready to be with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something about creating that space that it just, it helps extend the space you have for others. Like it's, yeah, a beautiful, beautiful, peaceful time. And I know some people will, I know I was like that too. Like I would hear that. And before I had this sort of switch where my vision wasn't like pulling me out of bed in the morning, I would sometimes struggle with that. Like getting up, like, you know, I would sleep through my alarm, like hit the snooze button. Like I've been on both sides of that. I felt both sides of what it feels like to be not, I wonder if it's almost like, it's like driven so much by your purpose. Like you're so connected to what you need to do. And then there's like that part of priming yourself and knowing that all those things fall into place. And then there's also, you know, being on the other side of that and not maybe feeling that, you know, that connection to waking up and, you know, making that space for yourself. So it's definitely an alignment, I think, of purpose and getting those things into place. Because when you do, I feel like all those behaviors actually become a lot easier.
Yeah. And here's something else I want to add to that. It's so good, Ashley. I think that we've got to treat ourselves and speak to ourselves. You're going to get this because you're a mom, but like we would speak to our children. So let's say the night before we are like, I am waking up at 5 a.m. tomorrow. I've got my alarm clock and whatever. And let's say we sleep through it. And let's say we don't wake up until 6. We cannot then go, oh, you are such an idiot. Like, why can't you just wake up? What's wrong with you? Like, how would you say to your child? You know, I would say your intention was good and you're going to try harder tomorrow. You're okay. You're okay. The world is not ending because you didn't wake up at 5. You will do better tomorrow. You know, like give yourself some grace, speak to yourself kindly. Yesterday, I, you know, didn't feel the best last night and I slept in today. My alarm went off at 4 and I didn't get up. And when I woke up, I didn't beat myself up about it. I was like, it's okay. That's what you needed today. It's okay. Again, it's about commitment. And it's not about being perfect, but it's about eventually just being able to really listen to your body and see what it needs. And that starts with kindness, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I had a conversation with one of my good friends that's a nutritionist, and we're putting together an episode for the podcast. And she said, you know, where people actually grow the most is when they experience those failures or they, you know, fall off track. That's actually where we learn the most. It's not when we're performing at our very best all the time. So you need that balance of behaviors feeling easy, but behaviors also feeling hard to have those learning lessons and to build upon, you know, getting more and more consistent with those things that you're wanting to change, those habits.
Oh, yeah. Purpose does not happen without pain. I mean, I think you have to experience pain to get to your truest self. I like to explain it as like soil. You know, I believe that our hearts are likened to the soil. And, you know, if your soil is hard as a rock, right? Nothing good is going to grow from it. You've got to tend to the soil. But here's the thing, is that is underground work. Nobody likes doing underground work because no one sees it. It's dark. Yeah. It's not fun. No one's cheering us along. There's no Instagram-worthy photo to post from underground work. But the underground work has to happen. And there's a breaking that has to happen, a break. The soil, the dirt has to break for something, for the fruit to begin to grow from it. And that is never going to happen. The fruit that we have to offer, the purpose that we have for this life, it's never going to come to fruition if we don't sit with the pain, if we don't do the underground work and we don't allow the breaking.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm so appreciative of all your insights and wisdom and everything that you have shared. Jessica, where's the best place for audience to find you, follow you, and learn more about you?
You can go to jessicazimmerman.com. That is me. Everything is there. You know, the book is there, Sleeping with a Stranger, and which Sleeping with a Stranger is a lot funnier than, I mean, I've talked pretty heavy today, but it's also got its funny moments, but it's also on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. But yeah, my Instagram and Facebook, you can find all that on jessicazimmerman.com.
Amazing. That's great. Thank you so much, Jessica, for your time today. I'm so appreciative.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
If you're ready to turn your Beachbody dream into a Beachbody business, I have something special for you. Business Bootcamp for Fitness Coaches will help you overcome the overwhelm of never knowing what to post so you can show up consistently on social, get off the icky hey girl hamster wheel, and finally see more engagement from customers who enthusiastically slide into your DMs to join you. This Facebook group is totally free to join. Head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now. And just for joining, you'll get 5 totally templated social media posts that work, accountability and camaraderie in our private Facebook group, and that post-workout feeling of accomplishment. See you there. Again, you can head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now.